Adoption. We'll be hearing a report on professional development and the recent college visitation trip that our high schoolers went on. Would you all please rise for the pledge? And Mr. Greenberg, could you lead us?
I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay. Is the high school government representative here? No? Not here? Or the middle school? Next week? Okay. All righty. Moving right along to board announcements. Are there any board announcements? It was a holiday. It's been quiet. Okay. Superintendent's announcements, Dr. Lewis.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome back from a wonderful break that we all needed and deserved. Tomorrow we'll start the state assessment testing, and I'm sure that the board will address the issue of how we will be dealing with that. Before the break, though, on April 1, we did receive from the legislators a bill that was quite a groundbreaking bill in terms of our discipline that introduces some new ways of looking at student performance and observations. The legislators have decided to have our whole world turned upside down, and how I think about it, by handing off to state ed a guidance document that they are going to be generating on June 30th, and then we as a district must negotiate between June 30th and November 15th a new APPR bill. That is the professional performance review. The APPR bill is the one that links student performance directly to teacher ratings. So we are sort of in a quandary as to what it will look like. We will keep you updated, but we know that there is no commissioner that exists right now. We are in an interim commissioner, and that the commissioner of education right now has only experience in areas that are non-educative. I mean, she's coming from an area that is not linked to education. It's in child services. I guess it is linked to education, but social services. And so right now we have one person who is the Deputy Commissioner, Ken Wagner, who is writing, I believe, the guidance document. We'll see what that looks like. Today the Board of Regents met to talk about whether or not they could accomplish the task at hand. And most of the Board of Regents are questioning whether or not they can accomplish the task. But Merrill Tisch, our chancellor, believes that we can. And she is adamant that they will complete the task on June 30th. So we will stay waiting, and then Morty and myself and Nina and Judy will have to sit down and try to figure out what this is all about while preserving the integrity of our profession. So that's where we are with that. I think this district has shown that they're committed to the children's education and not necessarily what the APPR process will ultimately, or what the state intends for the APPR process to yield, which is a teacher rating. That is not what we are about, and we are going to stay committed to preserving the classroom environment and the integrity of that. And that's where I am, and I know the board is. So that's my superintendent's announcement.
All right. The The agenda also includes reference to opt-out letters, and this relates to what I'm sure all of you know is been a very divisive series of educational issues facing us today. The Board of Education urges people to contact their legislators if as many of us do, you have concerns about the testing climate. Last year, the Board of Education adopted guidelines for parents who wished to have their children refuse testing. Parents are required to send a letter to the principal. I'm bringing this up because obviously testing is starting this week. The children who will not be tested will be taken to a supervised location where they can read and study. This ensures that children who are taking the test will not have any distractions. And this was something that we'd developed last year and that we'll also obtain this year. Yes, yes, Mr. Batan is away for 2 days meeting, out of town.
So, and we have been getting the letters, and we have been honoring those requests. So I believe I should acknowledge that the PCT will be providing some assistance for supervision of the opt-out rooms, and I thank you. So the students who bring in those refusal, or parents who have sent in the refusal notice, as the board has said, will be allowed to be in an area with a book and quietly through the testing time will sit quietly with a book until the testing is over, and then we return to the classroom, supervised, of course. That's it.
Reports and discussions.
With the board's permission, can we begin with the professional Yes. So I think you're going to be absolutely wowed. I know, that's a big... I was. What we have been doing in our leadership team, that is all of our principals, directors, all of our administrators, we meet monthly, and the entire team is divided into teams. And this year, the focus is around the board's goals. So we've asked all the administrators to provide a presentation around what they're doing in their buildings and departments around the board's goals. And they've all been outstanding. But this particular team chose to highlight the professional development that has been going on in the district that are targeted around the board's goals. So the team will come forward. And you'll see it's a cross-discipline, cross-building team of educators. So I will introduce the principal of Stratford Road, who is our team leader, Allison. We have Mr. Bowen, who is the math director, Mrs. Becker, who is our PPS director, Dr. Chen, who is our art director, and Jeff Yaglock, our English chair. So as you can see, it's cross-discipline and cross-buildings, and they're going to show you what we've been doing around professional development directed towards the board's goals.
Can they see over here on the things, or should I move the chair? Thank you for moving.
Good evening, everybody. So when thinking about the board goals, our team decided to share how we've addressed professional development across our varied areas and grade levels, and we thought this was a nice way to highlight it because we all cover such different areas.
Okay, I decided to take a little different spin on professional development rather than talking about the training we do for IEPs and things like that in our department and all of the mandates. And I wanted to share a little about the training we did with CPI and do each year. Crisis prevention intervention provides staff members with effective framework for decision-making and problem-solving to prevent, de-escalate, and safely respond to disruptive or assaultive behaviors, leading to more positive outcomes. And in light of the horrific stories we've heard in the media about elopement, this even becomes more relevant to the work we do. CPI when we deal with crises, it's a small segment of time in which staff members may intervene with another person or persons to address behaviors that may escalate into disruptive or violent incidents. The goal for staff members is to intervene in a way that provides for care, welfare, and safety and security for all of those involved. We've trained teams in each building. The training is really a two-day training that deals with academic study and hands-on, culminating in a test, and then each year the team members get a refresher course. We have provided in-depth training and certification for our two behavior consultants who provide the ongoing training in our district. And each year if a team changes because of a change in staff, we provide two days of, you know, intensive training for new members and continue to recertify the members. It has been very successful, and we have had instances where this has been implemented successfully in the district.
So taking a completely different look here, each of our buildings have literacy teams, and when meeting with my literacy team earlier this year, one of the areas we spoke about was how much everyone really enjoys learning from each other. We have many collaborative opportunities for planning and sharing throughout different structures throughout our day. So the literacy team decided that we should offer the opportunity for teachers to share their classrooms. Over two professional hour sessions, we had 18 teachers who volunteered to take a tour throughout their colleagues' classrooms. We spent about 5 minutes in each classroom as the teacher highlighted aspects of their rooms, whatever it was, their choice. And we had different examples where teachers pointed out a unit of study that they were working on, classroom management systems that are set up in their classrooms, use of bulletin boards and charts and pointing those out, and connecting to any of the other professional development opportunities they had attended and how they've implemented them within their classrooms. The teachers who were part of this commented on how excited they were to do this. And actually, we had to do this over two sessions because the first time wasn't enough, and we had new people join us the second time. They commented about how great it was to see other grades work, and they got new ideas. Primary teachers loved to see where the children were going, while intermediate teachers were so impressed with the learning in early grades. Other comments were related to seeing a thread woven throughout and how content and skills build on each other. From this, we even had some teachers who had asked for some follow-up sessions by going in and working with their colleagues more closely, seeing them in action with children. And again, it was just what I presented here on the right side. I just took a few photos because lots of people were snapping photos. On the right is just a little piece of the memo that we had put out as a literacy team, inviting anybody who wanted to be part of this. And it's definitely a structure that I could see us doing again in the future.
Good evening, everyone. Is it on?
Yes.
And yet again, another totally different approach to professional development. I held 4 hours, two different sessions for each of our levels of art teachers, elementary, middle, and high school. And our theme was Common Core and More. And what I hoped to do during that time was to give teachers the confidence that this is something that they can embrace and that they can be very accomplished at and comfortable with. We started off the session, and of course at the beginning of the whole approach of Common Core, you have to understand that all art teachers are trained, pretty much most of them are practicing artists to begin with, but art teachers are trained to approach art for art's sake. So they're very protective of the arts and that world. And a frequent comment, which I think we hear across the board, is, well, we already do this. So, you know, why? What is so different about this? So we set about to see how it was similar, but how we could showcase how Common Core fits in with the arts. So I began with Engage New York, a website which we've been working from. And we looked at the modules in Engage New York in the math and ELA shifts. I asked teachers to pick one lesson, either a math or an ELA lesson, and to think of a work of art that they could connect to that lesson. And I'm going to just pass this color copy around for reference. It was really interesting to see high school teachers take a primary grade math lesson and make it a real success, a hit. They took a lesson on, I believe it was subtraction, went to the Cezanne website at the Still Lifes, and the approach was how many pieces of fruit do you see in the bowl, and then how many are on the table, and how many do you see altogether? And everyone enjoyed it. They had great fun with that. So that was one approach. And then we looked at Coleman's 7 guiding principles for art, which we've used for many years. And it was very interesting to them to find out that he was one of the Common Core authors for the standards. So that gave them another boost. And we went on to another website, looked at resources and mapping, and then I wanted them to try it from the other way, to start with art, an art lesson. We did some mapping of the units that they currently teach. I asked them to select one, and then they incorporated the Common Core standards. For example, whomever the artist was or the work of art, they incorporated writing, speaking, and listening. And they were, again, some great lessons, and they had a lot of fun with it, too. And then finally, to show how today, bringing it up to date, the Common Core standards really overlap with the new national standards. They call them the Next Generation Art Standards. And if you could just click on that, I'm not going to show the whole YouTube, it's just the intro. This was the culmination of our workshop.
Then and now, celebrating Next Generation Art Standards. The National Art Education Association is a founding member of the National Coalition for Core Art Standards, a group of like-minded arts education communities writing next generation standards for dance, media arts, music, theater, and visual arts. This video will help you see what elements of the new standards are the same, what's different, and how NAEA will support your use of the new standards. The new art standards have much in common with the 1994 standards. They still convey knowledge and skills, are based on sound philosophical foundations and lifelong goals, and include glossary. As with all national standards, these art standards are voluntary and are designed to fit well into local teaching and learning situations, guiding students to achieve at the highest levels. The 1994 standards were written before technological innovations and were print-based. The new standards recognize traditional and contemporary approaches to achieving artistic literacy in a digital visual age, and they are web-based in a dynamic virtual environment. The 1994 standards were clustered by grade bands, while the new performance standards are grade by grade, preschool through grade 8 with 3 proficiency levels for high school. The 1994 standards were organized uniquely for individual art forms. The new standards are organized across arts disciplines in the same fashion and include 4 artistic processes. 1, creating. 2, presenting for visual arts or producing for media arts. 3, responding. And 4, connecting. We believe the best experience for students is one that integrates all of the processes while building artistic skills and behaviors.
So, ending on that note, everyone seemed to enjoy, got great feedback from the training sessions. And the best part was that I said, now when I come into the classrooms and observe your lessons or, you know, walk through and see what's happening, I want to see evidence of this in the classroom. And I have not been disappointed. So, and I'm sure you've seen it too when they display their art here in the boardroom in various schools as well. Yeah, thank you very much.
Good evening.
I
never get close enough. Thank you for having me. In 2013, 2014, last year in the second half of the year, the high school English department started working with an outside consultant, a gentleman by the name of Victor Jaccarino. He was a former English chair in Herricks. He was also the president of the New York State English Council, a brilliant, brilliant man. Some of us went to a couple of Western Suffolk BOCES sessions with him last year and were incredibly impressed by his knowledge and his delivery. From last year, the high school cabinet has been working, all the administrators, the directors, and chairs, trying to create a plan for staff development for everyone from 7th to 12th grade. A lot of this links back to that we've been analyzing PSAT and SAT data, looking at the Common Core instructional shifts and trying to figure out areas for improvement for instruction. So based on that, we came up with a plan, worked with Ms. Girash, and set up a plan for this year for grades 7 through 12. So in terms of 2014-2015, at the very end of August, as the school year was starting, he actually came and did a session with all administrators. So we were able to get an idea of the work that he's done with teachers so far, and he was able to also help to work with administrators and give a preview of the type of work that he's going to be doing with teachers during the course of the year. November, December of this year, he worked with high school teachers. We made a point of working with every discipline, all of the teachers in the high school, except for English, because English had a number of sessions with him already. January 2015, we had one day that he was also able to do some work with the high school English teachers. We did some curricular planning with him, and was starting to look at assessments. February and March, there were three different sessions with middle school teachers as well. Again, with except for English, English is going to be meeting later on in the year with social studies. We're going to be doing two different meetings in May. March, we just had another recent meeting where he worked with district administrators. We had two different half sessions, did some work with academic vocabulary. It was excellent. April 2015, just about a week ago, we had right before break, we had an open enrollment session. We thought it was very important that if we were going to be doing work with middle school and high school teachers, and teachers kind of going out on a limb and trying new approaches, for the people that were trying these new approaches and wanted follow-up and had some questions, we really wanted to create a session that these people could follow up. We had the first one. This went very, very well. What we ended up doing is in the morning, we were talking about academic vocabulary. The second half of the day was talking about research and an inquiry-based approach. The second session was actually scheduled for tomorrow, but once we realized that too many teachers were going to miss it because of the ELA exams, we're rescheduling that one for late May. And then throughout May, we're going to be doing two different sessions where he'll be working with middle school English teachers and working with social studies teachers as well. A couple of items to note, echoing a sentiment that Dr. Chen shared earlier, it really is amazing to sit in on a session and see it as it's starting at 8 o'clock and having a number of people look up and use that popular phrase, "We do this already," and countering what you hear at 7:45 or 8 o'clock in the morning with what you hear at 2:30 or 3 o'clock, where we go around the room and everyone shares new things that they were able to pick up and a new way of looking at things. A couple I think that were interesting, I have some questioning light bulbs. One thing that he illustrates is there's a time where he asks a question and ends up usually in a room of about 27 or 28 people. People give an incorrect answer, and really what he's trying to do is model the thinking that goes on when students answer, because it's a question that so many people come to with advanced prior knowledge, they often overlook what's actually going on in the text that's placed in front of them. So that's usually a big eye-opening moment. Another moment that I think is always pretty special is where he talks about getting away from yes and no questions. When he asks a yes or no question, everyone says yes, and then when we actually get into the reasons behind it, everyone has an incorrect reason. So we get to discuss the fact that someone can say yes or no, and a teacher can seemingly think that people are following along and understanding, but it's really the mode of thinking underneath it. Some of the things that we've worked on, specific learning targets, very often in ICANN statements to target the learning, and a lot of structured conversations and learning protocols. What Victor is really wonderful about is, especially with close reading techniques, of really trying to deliver content to the teachers that he's working with, and as he delivers that content, he teaches new learning protocols that can really easily be transferred to the classes. Some of the potential topics that we can talk about in the open sessions, and we talked about last time, are, again, additional learning protocols for instructional practices, academic vocabulary, which he sees as the most important element for all of us to rally around, close reading techniques, research, inferential questioning, And one of the things that we're going to work on next time is operating in a flipped classroom where more and more of the work is going on prior to class and really opening up time for more valuable discussion in class.
Good evening.
I will follow along, piggyback off what Mr. Yagoloff has said, and follow with the mathematics side of things. Last year we hit the ground running. We did quite a bit of staff development, district-wide, K to algebra. We really focused on the instructional shifts that were expected of the Common Core. We also focused, took a closer look at the standards within the grade level and also how they connect to their prior and previous grade levels. Another big focus that we looked at last year was really the understanding of the concepts related to specific standards, as well as the mathematical fluency of knowing their math facts and different strategies to support that. This year we definitely did a lot deeper unpacking of those specific standards. You know, teachers often work out of a resource and have an understanding of all of those concepts and what they have to teach, but don't always tie it back to the standards. So a lot of the work this year has been standards-based, and I'll show some of the reports that we use for that. And then with those standards, we try to align as many lesson plans and assessments directly tied to specific standards and not just testing on a specific skill. We also looked at some sample items from PARC, New York State assessments. We've obviously collected a lot more bank of questions for that. And the Regents exams at the high school level, which, you know, now we have more algebra exams and geometries next. I just wanted to pass out some teacher reports. So what's going around now, and I'll leave extra copies on the desk behind me, is a teacher and student report. So the teacher, I believe, is going this way, and student report is going that way. For the last year and a half, we've been using Linkit for analyzing our data. I'm not trying to sell Linkit. What I'm really trying to sell is, assigning standards and assessing those standards. So if you look at the sample teacher report, you could see a breakdown of the percentage of students in a class that select a specific choice. So for example, when you look at question four, it's circled, the 17% is circled, so that's probably a good distractor question there. And that opens up great conversations with teachers. So I've been doing this at small building level meetings with each grade level. We've been using Linkit from 3 to algebra. And then you'll see the percentage of questions for each. On the flip side, we also want to look at 100%. Why is it 100%? Is it because it's an easy question, or is it because we actually hammered that standard out very well? You also see the open response breakdown towards the bottom of that page. I don't want to bore you with tons of data. But on the flip side of the teacher report, what you really see is how did students do by standard? And that's truly what we really want to assess, which leads to what the student report says. So if you look at the student report, it says 73%, but it's clear that that student is doing well in some areas and not well in others. So that's really important because we don't want to look at just a value for an assessment. We really want to tie in where is he or she doing with respect to the standards. And then as well for this year and upcoming years, we've spent some time with the geometry teachers and had some professional development provided by Dan Drantz and myself. Again, looking at the instructional shifts, mathematical practices, the standards, taking a closer look at those, and providing some time for them to collaborate and bounce ideas off each other just in a safe space. For the upcoming years, as you know, Algebra 2 will be Common Core next year, so this will be going on, just replacing geometry with Algebra 2. And then the following year will be pre-calculus. And I think that's everything, unless you want to wrap it up.
Just one final comment, that really these professional development topics and structures are just a sampling of what's been taking place in all schools, across all grades, and within various departments. And so we were happy to share this with you.
Thank you. Thank you. Pardon me? Yes, yes, please. So many times the board approves professional development. You hear about bringing in a consultant or you have an initiative, but I think it's important that the board sees what our leaders are doing in the buildings and in the departments around the goals that you've established. And I'm actually very proud of the work that they're doing, and I just thought it worth sharing.
Thanks so much for sharing that with us. Do any board members have any comments or questions for the committee members?
Yeah.
So the board approved for the first time a college trip, and Ms. Lynn and, well, you will introduce this trip, but it was a tremendous success, and she'll give us all the details. Yes.
Good evening, everyone. I was going to say, well, Mr. Miller's getting set up, but he already is getting set up. First, I want to thank the members of the Board of Education and Central Administration for supporting this initiative. This is something that we in the High School Guidance Department have talked about for a long time, and we were really excited to have the go-ahead to plan this. So it's our goal for tonight is to give you a little tour of our tour, share with you some of our learning, some of our takeaways. We also have some students who've joined us tonight, so we'll ask them towards the end to come up and kind of share their experiences. We wanted to start small. We knew that there'd be a learning curve. So we wanted to kind of keep it to just one overnight. I think Mr. Miller will agree with me. We're a little gun-shy about the whole overnight thing, but it turned out more than great. And we learned quite a bit. We were surprised by some of the difficulty that we had in planning. We thought that colleges would really welcome us with open arms across the board, and it wasn't that easy, surprisingly, to have colleges host us. And Mr. Miller will talk a little bit about that. But again, we learned a lot, and keeping it small, I think, was a smart move. So our goals for the college trip, we wanted to focus on 10th graders. We wanted to expose the 10th grade students to the college admissions process and to college life. I did hear from some parents asking, why isn't this a trip for juniors? And we really wanted specifically to focus on the 10th graders. We wanted them to be prepared to go into their year of college exploration with some better background, more information. You know, we talked to juniors, especially at the junior conference, a lot about the different aspects of colleges, how to differentiate colleges. And we'll ask students things like, do you want a large school, a small school, an urban school, a suburban school? But those concepts are very abstract. And so we wanted to expose our 10th graders to that. And we also wanted them to learn about how their choices in high school will affect the kinds of schools that they are can look at and what their choices, the choices that they're making now, how it affects. You know, when you're talking to second semester juniors or first semester seniors, sometimes it's a little too late to make some choices about the courses that they're choosing and that kind of thing. So we purposefully chose 10th grade. The other thing is that we're very aware of is more and more because of the explosion of the number of applications that colleges receive, demonstrated interest becomes a very important piece of the college admissions process. And colleges will look at a junior who is visiting with their family. They've taken the time, they're spending the money and the time to visit a college much differently than a student getting off a school bus. And so we wanted, juniors really need to have a more focused type of visit than sophomores. So that that's sort of why we stuck to the 10th graders. So I'm going to hand it over to Mr. Miller. I do want, I do need to say, Mr. Miller really took the real lead on this in terms of planning our itinerary, doing the outreach with our college contacts, and he deserves a whole lot of credit for the success of this trip was. So I'm going to let him sort of drive the bus, as it were.
I see you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Hi, everyone. Thankfully, I wasn't driving the bus because we did hit some pretty bad weather on our voyage. We thought we were in the clear and talking about planning it. We were looking at the district calendar. We were looking at thinking about weather. We had daylight savings in our favor, so the sun was going to be out a little bit longer, so if we got to campus later. But however, it decided to snow a lot, guaranteed 100%, 4 to 5 inches the night before when I read the weather, and it did snow. So we did have that as part of our experience, but it added to our voyage. We brought 29 students. There was 5 chaperones, which was really fantastic. The chaperones that we had, they really definitely added to the dynamic of our trip, and one wonderful bus driver who had a seamless commute for us, so we definitely appreciated him taking good care of us along the way. When we were thinking about our agenda, we were planning and thinking about the schools to visit. We wanted to bring and try to get as much diversity of offerings, not only in the type of programs that each school offers, but location, availability, as well as what the schools do have on their campus. So our first stop was Drexel. We picked Drexel because, one, we wanted to break up the trip the best that we can. And like Lori said, it was a really challenge for us to get as much participation as I had hoped from these universities. When I worked in college admissions years ago, a group of students wanted to come visit us. We rolled out the red carpet. We were excited. When we were talking to some of the other tour guides, one of the tour guides said this was his 13th group tour in about a week. So we were kind of the norm for them, and I saw the challenges and understood it. I expected a little bit more out of it, to be honest, and I thought that they would have helped us a little bit more, and some colleges did. Drexel was actually a little bit difficult for us, but the purpose of going to Drexel is it's an urban campus. It has a wonderful 5-year co-op program, so students were able to hear about the offerings and what does it mean to be an intern for a full year to get that experience, that real-world application experience, to help make them more marketable once they do graduate. One of the things that we would change, and we'll talk a little bit more about our changes at the end of this presentation, but I didn't think about it. We got on the, we took a 2.5-hour bus ride, we got to campus, and then it was like, hey guys, now sit down and listen to somebody speak for an hour. So again, something that I would look at and think about a little bit differently. How to have avoided that, I don't know. Because of our time constraints, we didn't do a walking tour of Drexel, but we did sit in on a presentation. I tried really hard, and a lot of the students in the beginning, we didn't prepare them well enough, and it's one of the feedback things that we've taken away is we want to prepare them a little bit better moving forward. So they gave a wonderful presentation, and we wanted some questions to be asked, but I don't think the students had the knowledge in terms of what they should be asking just yet. So I tried at each location to ask as many questions as I could. And like Ms. Lynn said, the opportunity for the 10th graders to hear what they could be doing to better suit themselves in the search process as well as the application process. So I would ask questions, what could a student who's planning their schedule take? What are you looking for? What activities are you most impressed with on an application? And then we talked about this on the bus as well, preparing them for questions at each campus. And the really nice thing for me to see is as we progressed on each campus, more and more students were asking some really fantastic questions. After Drexel, we walked to UPenn. It's about a 10-minute walk, so we were able to navigate, guided our students to the University of Pennsylvania, where they had our students waiting in a room. This was a very, very large tour. It's hard to see, but if you look at that lower left picture, that is not just our students, that is along with 50 other people on that tour. So like I said, each visit was very different experience. This school is not hurting for applications, as you can imagine, so they didn't, you know, it wasn't, you know, anything special for us to be there, unfortunately. For us, it was very special. The weather definitely played a part in that. We did cut our trip short at the University of Pennsylvania because of the weather.
Yeah, I'll just jump in. The pictures aren't doing it justice, but they had upped it to 5 to 8 inches of snow, and this was in the middle of just a downpour. It was snowing very heavily. The umbrella that you see is mine. I was the only one with an umbrella. The kids were shivering. They were shivering, and the entire tour was outside. So I made the executive decision that we needed to get them inside. They were soaking wet. So I said, how about we go to the bookstore? And they jumped with joy, and we walked to the bookstore. So
in planning, I didn't allot enough time for us to plan the bookstore, so it worked out very well. I wasn't thinking, I was focused on the tours and the information, forgetting that everybody does like the gift stop,
right,
the gift store,
exactly.
At the end of the visit.
Right,
From the University of Pennsylvania, we packed up our belongings and we headed to Muhlenberg. Muhlenberg, I have to say, was incredibly accommodating. They were a pleasure to work with. I had really laid down the groundwork from the moment of September. We have colleges visiting our school every September, as you know, ninth period. I took that opportunity to meet with as many reps as I could in that area to give them a heads up that I'm looking to bring a bunch of students. What kind of recommendations do you have for me? Muhlenberg was fantastic. I got our evening program recommendation, which I'll speak about in a moment, from Muhlenberg. Muhlenberg went above and beyond everybody else. They had students in the lower right-hand corner of that picture. That's Leah. She's a graduate of Plainview. She works in the admissions office at Muhlenberg. One of their tour guides was a former Plainview student as well. Muhlenberg, again, was really able to connect with our students from our community, which was fantastic. I brought presents from Plainview with me at every place we went, so I was able to give Leah and the other tour guide a gift from Plainview High School as a thank you, because I know how much work that they had put into it. Muhlenberg broke us up into small groups, which was really nice, so rather than a tour of 50 people, let's say, it was broken into, say, 10 people. So the chaperones, we all separated, we went on these tours, and it was a really great opportunity. Muhlenberg is a Lutheran college, which many people didn't realize. And it was interesting, I think, for most of our students, especially myself, to see that even a school that has a religious background, their population, one third of their students are Jewish.
Yeah.
They have one of the most active Hallels in the country.
Wow.
So the Hallel being the Jewish organization. So it's just really neat to see that when you're looking at schools, you're looking at everything. It's not just their affiliation, but who the student body is on that campus. Muhlenberg has an excellent business program, an excellent arts program, a dance program. They dropped us off right at the art building when we gathered, which was great for Mr. Jacobson, our art teacher who was on that tour. I was able to point out to the students some of the observations that he had seen. Really quick, that left picture on the top is a cathedral. Take note, I'll point that out again. That is a smaller version, and we're going to see the larger version as well. Part of Muhlenberg's experience that the students absolutely loved was we ate in the dining hall. So we had an opportunity to sit in the dining hall, all-you-could-eat buffet.
They were amazed.
Unreal.
They were amazed.
Really unreal. The ice cream sundae was definitely a hit, but it was well-deserved for the time and the effort that they had put in so far with us. Oh, yeah. We tried to really, what I thought was so great about this was pointing out the different things that, and if you remember being on a college campus, how much change there is and what kind of activism goes on a college campus. After our meal, we were waiting outside in the hallway, and right above us were a restroom sign. There was a female restroom, a male restroom, and a gender-neutral restroom. That prompted the most pictures of the trip was the sign that said gender neutral.
Really?
Which really allowed an opportunity for me to get back on the bus and speak to our students about how college is really a place for everybody and how there's a change and it's an acceptance. And it really, I think, opened up a lot of eyes to many people. They were shocked by this. They couldn't figure this out. What is this? But it really provided a lot of opportunities. When we were on UPenn's campus, we didn't get a picture of it, but earlier in the news, there was a big topic. Somebody, I believe, was lynched in the South. And there was a big sign on campus that said a man was lynched. And that prompted a lot of pictures. But again, creating a lot of good conversation about what college has to offer for you and how you can really find your own, you can have a voice, and you can kind of be the student that you may want to be. So it really provided some great conversation on this trip. From Muhlenberg, we went back to the hotel really quick, and then we headed out to Rascals Food and Fun. There might be a familiar picture on the left-hand side if somebody might know.
Yeah, now.
I'm sorry?
That's a four-year college.
Yeah,
Rascals Food and Fun, it is.
So
this was like a Dave and Buster's type of environment where we allowed the students to hang out and enjoy themselves and relax. We did put in a lot of effort, and I tried my hardest to try to find activities on campus. I wanted so badly to go to a sporting event or a musical event or an a cappella show. I tried every single school in that area, and with timing, we were missing things by days. So that was a bummer for me. I would have loved to have had more interaction on that campus and seen a little bit more, but we made the best of it, and then you could see lights out. We taped our students in, which was a new experience for many of the students that have not been on an overnight trip, so they weren't as used to why we were doing this, but it worked out really well.
Appropriately,
went with 29 and came home with 29. After Rascals, the next morning, we started our trip at Lehigh.
My Lehigh guy.
I was trying to bring in as much information as possible and try to shake it up as much as I could rather than going on an information tour. What I did for this was I was looking for student life. This school would not provide me a tour on a Saturday morning. Mr. DiDomenico's sister, a guidance counselor in our office, works at Lehigh in Greek Affairs, so I reached out to her. She rounded up a bunch of students who took us on a tour, and my goal of this trip was really to focus, or a Lehigh stop, was to focus on student life and what's offered at student life. Ms. Lynn, if you want to click on the bottom, we had a chance to sit in on a classroom, and we really had a panel discussion with the students. So just a little snippet of what was going on. One of the questions was like, what is Greek life? What's the value of being in a fraternity or a sorority? So we really had a classroom experience. Lehigh turned out to be one of my personal favorite stops on the trip because it became so much more than I had hoped. The conversation that we had with the students, the classroom environment, sitting in with the students, it really became just a dynamic environment for us to really learn about what college has above and beyond the academics.
And Mr. DiDomenico surprised us there, so that was a nice surprise.
Yeah, so he did pop up and join us.
Oh,
as well.
So.
After Lehigh, we headed over to Lafayette, which is very close, about 20 minutes away. What I really thought was so awesome about both of these campuses is that there was a lot of conversation between Lehigh and Lafayette. Everybody at Lehigh boos at you when you mention the word Lafayette. Everybody at Lafayette boos at you when you say Lehigh.
Great.
And really what I always hear in my office and the guidance office is, I want to go to a school that's rah-rah, and I want to go to a Michigan type of place. What was really great is that you can go to a school of 3,000 students and get that rivalry that you're looking for and that involvement and that enthusiasm, even though it's a smaller environment. So that was a really cool opportunity, I think. Our students were fixated. Every question that the group that I was on was, what do you do for Lehigh for this? When do you guys play them in basketball next? They couldn't get past this rivalry, and it was really an exciting environment for the students. Things were closed at Lafayette. We were able to have lunch. I learned that chicken fingers is more popular than hamburgers.
Yes.
they liked. After that, we headed over to Princeton. This is our last stop on the day. That picture I pointed out earlier at Muhlenberg, the inside, that top right corner, is the actual or the original version of it. So Muhlenberg replicated the cathedral that's on Princeton's campus. So it was really kind of neat that if you click on that picture, Ms. Ling, you actually hear the tour guide explain it to us. So it was a really cool and unique opportunity that we were able to see two of the same cathedrals in one visit. Princeton proved to be a very lively campus. We saw a wedding proposal, a prom proposal, and a music video being filmed all on campus. So again, giving light to what college life really is all about. And for me, one of the best opportunities to engage in further conversation. Bulletin board on the end, again, pointing out the different activities and events that are going on a college campus. And whenever we could, I tried to point out those as much as possible. On our ride home, we went over the Throsneck Bridge. Those of you familiar with it, right below is Maritime, SUNY Maritime. So an opportunity for me to engage and talk a little bit about SUNY Maritime and what it means to go to a place like that. And now, if you'd like, Ms. Lynn, good time to bring up our students.
Sure.
If Steffi and Evan want to come up and maybe share a couple of words with their experiences, you can hear directly from our students that were on our trip.
Hello.
Can you introduce yourself?
I'm Evan.
Evan, can you pick up the microphone?
You
can take it out.
I'm Evan Melly, and I thought the trip was great because as a sophomore, I really wasn't thinking about college, but I realized, like, I gotta think about it sooner.
He's a Lehigh guy.
It's gonna sneak up on me.
True.
And
he's a Lehigh.
The trip introduced me to a bunch of different colleges, and I realized that I don't like an urban college, and I like a more small college. And before the trip, I wanted to stay home. But then going to all these colleges made me realize that I want to live on campus. And I really enjoyed the experience. So thank you for the trip.
What did you learn about how you
prepare? Oh, yeah, he was the one.
I realized that, I have to pick up my grades to get into the college that I want, and I need to participate more in school, because I learned that schools don't always just look at your grades, they look at outside activities, and yeah.
Anything about what you
Not really.
Thanks, Evan. Great job.
Hi, I'm Stephanie Cassell, and you know, I always thought I wanted to go to a small college, you know, going into high school, but after, you know, going on the tour and visiting all these type of colleges, you know, big, small, I realized I wanted to go to, like, sort of like a medium size, because I remember at Muhlenberg, our tour guide was a student that is currently going to the school, and every person she passed seemed to know her, and like, wow, that's kind of cool, but I want to go to a college where, you know, I meet, like, so many new people, and, you know, college, yeah, it's about, you know, what you want to do, and, but I also look at the social aspect, you know, people, you know, who you might be friends with for the rest of your life, and, yeah.
Anything,
something
that you
learned about the admissions process?
Right, yeah.
Thank you. Great. Wasn't that wonderful? Thank you.
One of the comments that I had on the tour, one of my students stopped me and said, Miller, when we get back, can I talk about my schedule? And I had asked how come, and he's like, I realize I got to take a couple harder classes. I really want to have the opportunity to apply to some of these places. We had a trip. We had our shirt made for our tour, so all of our students got our, this is like our concert tour.
Just let me know. I do want to talk a little, just very quickly about some of the things that we learned moving forward. Hopefully with your support, we will continue and expand this trip. For next time, we need to have a pre-tour meeting. The students and the parents need to be better prepared. We can discuss expectations. Sometime the dress wasn't exactly what it should have been. But, you know, we didn't prepare them properly, so we need to do a better job at that. We want them to have information packets about each school so that they can walk away with that, and also be prepared with questions that they can ask once we get there. We did put in for some curriculum writing this summer so that we can plan out some activities for them on each campus. We had a very ambitious tour schedule, very ambitious itinerary.
Very much so.
Each of the counselors met with their students that attended the trip to follow up with them and get some feedback. And something that we heard more than once was that they wanted to spend more time on some of the campuses. And so we need to allow them to relax a little and walk around a little instead of, you know, keeping to the schedule.
Would you look at extending it then to, you know, two overnights so that you could just,
Yeah, absolutely. In some ways, you know, three schools in a day was good, but it was exhausting for everyone. And again, we were really racing around, and they, you know, there's activities that we can plan with them on each campus and spend some more time.
Yeah, one of the things that I thought about once we took off, and I wish I thought about it beforehand, was I would love to give the families an opportunity to create, for us to create a unique hashtag. So, you know, hashtag POV College Tour that would allow not only us to leave a photo documentary for those parents that are following what their children are up to, but the students could also be adding to that hashtag as well, so that anybody that wants to log on, we can be keeping track.
Love
so it'd be a neat way for parents to see their children on these campuses, the things that we're seeing on this campus.
Love it.
And let everyone follow us as we're going through our experience.
Wow.
So, thank you all so much for your support.
Thank you.
Bravo.
Emily, just have a question. Will you be looking at other avenues? I know you went in that direction. Are you going to be looking towards New England?
Yes.
Would it be?
I'd like to do
not California.
I'll chaperone.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm there already. But I think that giving the exposure also, and you picked really good schools. I mean, I know the proximity of each of them, but I think that they were diverse enough. The kids saw a small one, a large one. The Wish one is obviously Princeton. New Penn is right there. But it's great motivation for students also to realize that this is, a lot of kids don't see the schools until they get accepted. And this is marvelous, I think. And I'm glad you made some mistakes and you're going to check it, but it's really great that you know where now to look, not to do it again. So thank you very much. That was great.
Got Debbie and then Seth.
I just want to really say thank you because it's something I know you've been talking about for a while. I know we had been talking about for a while, and it's really exciting to see this happen, and it's so exciting to see your passion about
this.
Yes,
that's
and the fact that, really, you know, it's a living thing, so you're going to change it as you discover things that will improve it. So I just want to thank you for taking this great step, and we're excited to see where you will go on your journey next.
Okay. Seth, you want to know?
Yeah, I echo everyone's remarks. I think it's great. The one question I had was, in terms of timing, did you think the time of year that you did this worked best, or you think that there would be another time that allows you to expose the students to a...
Because it's
kind of around spring break time for many colleges, right? So
yeah, and some of the schools wouldn't allow us because their students weren't there. Yeah. It was really by the time we knew about when we could do this and working with our schedule, not doing it to interfere with DECA, not interfering with the shows that are going on.
Right.
So it was really
tough
to figure out the best time for that.
I was going to say, we looked at this over 4 years ago, started to really do our homework on this and follow some of the models of some of the other districts. And a lot of other districts during midterms, and they make arrangements for the kids to either have their midterms before or after the tours. And it allows for a little bit more time when kids might not have as many classes and things like that. So we would look at that. Again, the approval process for us was a little bit late, so it was a struggle for them to get to some of those schools. But I do want to just echo your remarks, and this has been a 4-year process, and I want to thank you for all the time that you put in and just the energy and excitement for the kids. It is important that we do look at our 10th graders, though, and you heard Evan say, like, these are things I wasn't thinking about. Also, the cost factor. This was at a minimal cost, and we were able to present, you know, have kids go to 6 colleges.
Down just a little bit. It's noise. It's a little noise.
Sorry. Go ahead. 6 colleges in a short period of time for a minimal cost that maybe some families could not afford, and to give our kids this kind of exposure with the educators, speaking to students, faculty. I want to thank the faculty that volunteered to participate on the trip. I think the diverse group of chaperones was helpful as well. And I know, Jason, Lori shared with me that you're already thinking of some of the games that you can play with the kids on the bus to prepare them.
Yeah, like a scavenger hunt and other activities.
It's just
to stay engaged.
Again, thank you so very much.
We kept joking, we're bringing 29 there, we have to bring 29.
That's your goal.
Now
you can do it.
Now I know the taping of the door really works.
Yeah. Well, for public information, we did offer this for 50 students to attend, but it was like a 3-week turnaround, so we were fortunate that we had 29 that were able to go, and I think the cost was like $250 a child.
Money well spent.
Can I suggest, although maybe it's just going to be out there because of this trip, but that next year at the beginning of the year, you let parents and students know about this in 10th grade so they can plan whether it's budgetary or...
Yeah, we'll roll it out at our 10th grade.
That's great. Terrific.
As a parent whose child did go, I also wanted to say I thought it was really well done. And I love the idea of the hashtag because my kid is not a particularly good reporter, and I kept trying to tease information out of him. Also, the pre-meeting to discuss clothing would have been really great. He was the goofball in the T-shirt and shorts and all the pictures. So, yeah.
One of the prime reasons we
kept that short. Right. I want to thank you, Mr. Miller. Your enthusiasm is infectious.
Thank you.
And Mrs. Lynn, this is really about building futures together. I mean, when you think about our theme and the energy and enthusiasm that you went into this, I want to assure everyone as we adopt the budget that this is very much in the budget. and that we've added another night, and it's in the budget. So there's all good reasons for us to celebrate the budget that we're going to be adopting tonight.
Thank you. Thank you. Which segues. And thank you to our students very much also. Which segues into our next item, which is
budget adoption.
It's really, just think about all the things we've done.
Okay.
Really.
Yes. Yes. Lauren's done a good job.
How's that?
Yes.
Okay, budget adoption. Just to refresh everybody's memory as to where we've been and where we're going, on February 23rd, we had the superintendent's proposed budget at $145 million, a 0.78% budget-to-budget increase, a levy of $122 million and a 0.58% tax levy. March 30th, with some budget modifications, we were at $145 million, 0.91% budget to budget, tax levy of $122 million, and the tax levy of 0.73%. Then April 1, we received the state aid. So with that, again, the budget to budget remained the same at 0.91%, and the levy decreased because of increased GEA funding. We were at $121 million and a 0.16% levy. Tonight, we're going to be looking at our final modifications.
So we're on the C, we're on the C modification.
Do we have any additions or deletions or discussion?
Yes.
Yeah, this, right. We'll explain
so
this.
So at the last meeting, we had some questions asked by the board in terms of the music lab. We went back, did some homework, and in fact, when we priced all the equipment, we realized that we needed, in each of the buildings, another $50,000 at Matlin and a $50,000 at POB Middle School. So if we are going to complete the entire project, we would need an additional $100,000 to the budget.
I'd like a motion, please, to increase the budget owed, and I really can't see, it's too dark here, but for the Matlin and POB Music Studio and Tech Labs by $100,000, $50,000 allocate each building.
Any discussion? No, can I just explain that? So it's actually three different labs. So it's the music studio, the technology labs, which are traditional labs that we have now, and a multifunction STEAM lab, which incorporates some of the Z-Space equipment. So, and actually, we're doing pretty good if we can get all three pieces together. So thank you for that addition.
So by this vote, those will not only exist, but they will be outfitted and whatever they need.
Correct. So we did an analysis of the current equipment that's there. We looked at between the curriculum budget and the two middle school budgets, what was already allocated. From the time we first established the budget, we went out and got some quotes for some things. If you recall, particularly for the music studio, that was added in at the last minute. So these are some of the things that we were able to refine a little bit in greater detail. One of the pieces that we'll need to look at is, you know, with some of the bond work being done, is we're working with Andy Ward, our grounds person, and our facilities person, to make sure that, you know, these can be put in place for September. So that's an issue that, you know, we still need to work out. But again, in terms of cost factor, this will put us in a good position to get these up and running.
Okay, so we'll add that.
I have a question.
Sorry.
Is there curriculum writing and staff development that part?
Yes, so although that hasn't been presented yet, the curriculum writing goes through BOCES budget, but we'll work, all the curriculum writing will be in place to get these pieces up and running. We have, we actually started some of the curriculum writing last summer through some of the tech labs, and we actually did some training as well for teachers last summer.
So, and the STEAM lab, it's not just for art, right? It's for, you know, any subjects can...
Oh, absolutely. One of the really neat things with the Z-Space equipment, you know, initially there was a lot of tech and science. That is expanding twofold. Just, you know, we're one of the ones on the East Coast with this, but they've installed new art curriculum on that. Teachers are building it throughout the country. So it's really expanding. I think the labs will be packed with teachers in there.
Any other discussion? All those in favor?
Unanimous. So moved.
We also, at the end of the meeting, there was a question about the voting machines, and we did some homework. While they are recommending that we purchase the amount that was in the budget, they do not have, if one of the machines breaks during the voting, they are recommending that it's not going to happen, so... I'm not comfortable with that. So I would suggest that we have duplicates at each of the sites, and that would mean adding three additional voting machines and some more privacy booths at the with a total cost of $21,705. That's a recommendation.
I'll move that. Debbie?
Yeah, I was going to make that motion, even though it disturbs me that we have to, you know, it's yet another unfunded mandate where we're told we need to have these machines at the cost to our taxpayers. So,
unfortunately, it's right. One of those things where we would have to be prepared.
Yeah, exactly.
Not comfortable.
And since they warned us that the machines are super sensitive,
mm-hmm. Yes,
you can only imagine.
It seems to be like an oxymoron mm-hmm. that you turn around and say you don't need them with the
correct
machine, since they warned us that you need a person to be there in case something happens to the machine.
Well, you know, the interesting thing is that these machines are not made in New York, and they're not made in Plainview, and they're not made in Long Island. Mm-hmm. So they don't know, they're not used to the idea of having the tallies at the end of by 9 o'clock or between 9 and 10. So they're saying if a machine breaks down, you still have the tally sheets. You could take it at the end of the night to the other location and scan it. And so it's not critical. But for us, we would own, we're accustomed to having our votes that night. And so waiting another day is not part of the mix. No.
Only because you're very sensitive, so they're going to have to...
We will have to find... I'll have to speak to
if,
Mr. Ward if
they
about
do,
that.
If they do break or misfunction, who do we call to repair these? Is there a particular company that services these?
Well, you know, they're also new. One of the things we'll have to have is that each of the voting sites will have to have an expert person who knows how to... respond to any glitches. That's one cost. But in terms of fixing, I don't know yet. I would have to speak with the county to see what they do for their machines. But they say they're 99% foolproof. So
yeah, guess we'll see.
Correct.
So this will give us two machines per voting site.
There'll be two machines per voting site.
And I'm just curious why it's $28,000 for three machines up top net of what we were going to pay for rental, and it's $21,000 for three.
Because part of it, remember there was a handicap piece that we don't need to replicate.
Okay, thanks.
Anything else? Ginger had seconded that before. Full discussion. All those in favor? So moved.
Mr. Greenberg?
So the board had previously received a request from Little League Baseball that it was looking for a place to store a place on the district's at the baseball fields of on district property, a place to store, among other things, AEDs that it had purchased for such purpose. I, for one, certainly support having AEDs on our field, and to the extent that they seek to donate those AEDs and place them on the field, I would like to put money into the budget so that the district can certify the AEDs and mount those AEDs at each baseball field. So I don't know exactly, I mean, I know something that a request has come in. I don't know if the district has been able to cost that out in terms of what it would be. So I'd like to know, A, what it is, but whatever it is, I think it's something, again, that we budget for in the event that they're, you know, if they're willing to make that donation. I know it wasn't exactly the full request, but I certainly support having AEDs on the field and would like to budget for it.
I'll second it. So we'll discuss.
You have to have a number, though.
Right. So the cost is it? We've costed that, and it's $5,000.
So I would motion. I would like to make a motion to update or change the modification list to include a line in the budget for $5,000. That would be the cost to certify and mount the AEDs that would be donated by them at the baseball fields on our district property.
Any second?
Yes.
I'm assuming when you say baseball, you mean baseball and softball, right?
So yes.
Girls and guys. Okay.
They'll be mounted.
Okay.
Of course.
Uh-huh. Any further discussion?
Now we're at 1%.
We're at 1%.
Okay. Further question? Go ahead.
I had a question about something from last time. It's on the top of the list about the BOCES career tech ed students. Since we were reducing the number of students, is there a corresponding decrease in transportation costs? This is the enrollment code, but.
Right. No, there isn't, because we have our own van that takes the students to back and forth, and it can accommodate up to the 23 we had before, and there's no less cost with the 10.
Thank you. So,
great question.
Mr. Greenberg.
Sorry, I know the last time we were talking about changes to the budget, one of the things that we had discussed but had not made, there was no motion on, but we discussed in part, was the elementary extra help. And so I know that we've received some mixed feedback about it, but one of the things I would like to make a motion for is to make a motion to have additional funds included in the budget for the purposes of covering two grades in the same manner that we're covering one grade in the elementary extra help.
I'm going to second that motion because I think last time there were people who were concerned about whether or not how many students really participated in it, you know, what was the right grade level, et cetera. And I know that I have just stressed that the change in third grade just seems to be, for some kids, so difficult, and that second grade is the foundation, then we build into third grade. So I agree.
Discussion?
I don't have a number more.
Dr. Lewis, can you make a recommendation on this?
In terms of the grade level, or?
No. Whether you feel that we should be doing two grades.
Well, I do know that almost all the PTAs, when they spoke with the board, spoke about the difficulty children were having and parents were having in grades 3 and 4. So if I were to, if there were no additional funds, one of the things I would have suggested would be to take the current grade 2 funds and move it to one of those two grades. That would be a recommendation that I would be bringing to the board later. If the board is now giving us another grade level, I wouldn't say no to it.
Yeah, again, on average, the attendance was approximately 6 students throughout. We ran the program from October, late, we started a little bit later, but I think it started in November, but our plan was October through May for grade 2. We did see some consistency in the, not only the numbers of students attending, but the actual students. So there were many repeat students from week to week in both the ELA and math. Some of the feedback, and again, all the parent surveys are not in, but some of the feedback was, you know, although my child did not utilize the program, I appreciated that it was offered. There were a couple people that said they didn't know about it. It is up on the website. There were e-blasts out several times. So again, you know, even though maybe we start it, we just might through periodically throughout the year continue to remind them of it.
I do know
when I had raised it last time, I think the conversation was it going to be topical? We wanted to make sure if it was expanded or in a different grade, it was not test prep, that the teachers would do it as they were doing each different lesson so that, you know, this was not going to turn into something that was just additional help for a test, but this is actual learning and going by what has to be done.
Just one thing, I think, Ginger, actually you were the one that made the motion. I think it was tabled, and so
yeah.
I don't know, from a procedural standpoint, technically if I'm just
untabling it, making
untabling
a motion.
It and just having the discussion, I don't know how it works, but
it's fine. You made a motion. It's fine.
I would make a suggestion that perhaps our low numbers in second grade, that maybe this year we pilot it just in third grade and see how that is successful, and then maybe you want to decide from there as to what might be the best process for the children for extra help, or unless we can maybe think outside the box and find another way to deliver these services to the children, you know, next year. Perhaps it's something you want to explore, we'd like to explore.
I'll just piggyback on what Evie said. One of my concerns was that the second grade just did not seem to be a grade that was generating the interest. Third grade, I'd be concerned about doing it in fourth grade because of music lessons and so on. So I also tend to think that it would make sense to look at third grade and, you know, see if that has any success. I'm not really sure that doing second and third grade would add much benefit.
There's a motion on the floor, so maybe perhaps you should vote on the motion on the floor, and then somebody wants to make or give a direction, because if you're going
to
keep it the way it is,
right,
it's just
right
to have the option, but you could call the question.
So
the cost, you should know what the cost
22,
is. It's the $32,000.
Please keep it down, folks.
For each
thanks.
Grade level, it's $32,840 for a grade level. So that's
okay.
What we're,
okay,
it's,
so
that's the amount.
What are we voting on now?
To expand it to two
if
grades.
If you want to expand it to, we currently we've got money in the budget for one grade level.
Okay.
So we would have to add $32,840 for another grade level.
Right.
Okay. All those in favor? All those opposed? Bum, bum, bum. Motion does not pass. Tied.
So currently we have in the budget
a grade level.
So
whether it's going to be second again would be something that we would be
so
discussing.
You don't have to make a motion on it. I don't have to make a motion. This will now be up to
the superintendent.
Superintendent,
right, yeah.
As to where to. Thank you.
Any further modifications?
Let's see where we're at.
Can you see?
We're at 1% with a budget.
Go
with
ahead.
A,
51. We wanted to bring that
below 1%.
1%. The tax levy is
0.84.
Why is it so high?
No.
I thought it was so much lower.
You want to flip to?
Yeah. I don't think that's really there.
It's 0.26.
Oh.
Because the, which we hadn't discussed.
Oh, well, we should discuss the, that.
Right. That we did have state aid that was restored, mm-hmm. and if we apply all of the GEA restoration, that would lower the tax levy from where it was last week. I believe last week when we left it, it was at 0.71, and if we applied that, we would, and the modifications that you've put in, it would bring the budget to budget to be 1.0, but it would also, because we've applied the GEA restoration, it would be a tax levy of 0.26.
So we had talked about trying to keep the budget to budget below the that 1.0 number?
That was the intention of doing so. Yeah, there was.
You tried.
There was an intention
of
having
it. Don't give us another meeting.
Below one. However, we have maintained a tax levy in the magnitude that we wanted. So
do you have any suggestions?
So if the intention is to go below the tax levy, we have, we had. I'm sorry, below the 1% budget to budget, we did have. Given all of the capital that we've been doing, we do have a large interfund transfer that if we were to lower that sum enough to bring it under the 1%, we certainly could do, like, a $50,000 would certainly do that and not affect in a major way the things that we had intended to do.
Maybe you could see what that looks like.
Yeah.
Yeah. 0.97 budget to budget with a tax levy increase, not very much difference, right?
So that's it. So on the bottom right, I'm looking at the left. The 0.22, is it?
Right.
Yeah,
0.22. Coming in with
the levy. The budget to budget is 0.97.
And the levy, 0.22.
Okay,
that would accomplish.
All right,
do I have a motion?
So, do me a favor.
Yeah,
flip it over to D, because I know you formulated that.
So I'd like to make a motion that.
Go over to the D, and then.
We reduce the interfund transfer.
We'll name it D.
Code by $50,000.
And put the interfund into that one, because I want to make sure that you.
Right, do I have a second?
I'll second.
I just want to make sure.
Ginger Shore, she called it. Okay, any discussion? All those in favor? So moved.
Good morning.
So before we do that, let's just see the actual, I want to make sure that the formula sheets are correct. And roll it to good. She has to roll it. Wait. It's coming. There. There, now it's right. I just want to make sure that I had it in two places. So the budget to budget as it exists is a 0.97 budget to budget, and the tax levy increase is 0.22.
Good
job. So 0.97 budget to budget, and tax levy increase of 0.22.
Can I just make a comment?
And a budget that has
exactly
the things that we need to move the district in a bright future.
Okay. Amy?
I just want people to realize that the GEA restoration is not a full restoration. So if they're contacting their legislators, that's only about 30% of our GEA reduction. So I don't want it to look like they're restoring our GEA when they're really... just doing a little
bit. We're taking that money and giving it back to the taxpayers.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
This is the public participation part of the Variety Hour. We will be opening the floor for public participation. District policy number 1510.1 provides that persons wishing to make comments or raise questions shall one, state their name and address, and two, indicate on whose behalf they are speaking, if a non-resident. Policy prohibits public discussion on matters relating to staff and students at which their reputation, privacy, or rights to due process or those of others could be in some way violated.
We ask you to limit your comments to 3 minutes so everyone has a chance. The floor is now open. 2, 3, 4, 5.
Okay. We will, but that should have, shouldn't it be under?
It will be.
Unfinished business?
Yes.
Good evening. My name is Steve Weiss. I'm at 42 Ridge Drive in Plainview, resident. I came to speak a little bit about, proposed closing of the Case Center. There's been a lot of discussion about it, and there's been some concerns. You know, when I was a kid, I used to do projects around the house with my father. My father used to tell me, measure twice, cut once. And I took that into all aspects of my life. Take a look at something closely, take a look at it again before you make a move, because when you make that cut, sometimes you can't fix it. So there's some issues with the Case Center closing that have not been addressed, and people have questions about it, and I think that's been the source of a lot of the confusion and discussion amongst the people in the community, is that there's been no real data. There was an SRC report that was very limited, didn't really give us any information, but recommended a closing. So some of the questions I think that need to be answered in a comprehensive report that's presented to the people prior to any discussion that we would have in that May meeting that's been scheduled would be some answers to questions like, what's the overall savings to the district? What is going to be done with the money that is saved? The layouts of the new schools, the classroom size, and the class use of the classrooms is a concern. So where are we going to put the kids in the elementary schools? And the services that are displaced out of the classrooms, where are we going to relocate them to? So some of the services like reading and math, you can't really put those things in the same room because they're activities that the children need to speak. You can't have the math teacher on one table and the reading teacher on another table. So they need separate rooms, whether rooms are split or they have their own rooms. We need to get a really clear picture of where these kids are going to be, a map layout of how the buildings are going to be presented to the children. Some kind of report on the adequacy of the playgrounds and whether they're age appropriate at the elementary schools for the kindergartners would be something I would look at talking about. Are the classrooms in the elementary schools comparable to the classrooms in the Case Center? Some of the Case Center classrooms are large. They have bathrooms, a lot of them split bathrooms. Like, where are we putting the kids when we put them in these elementary schools? Are they going to have comparable classrooms to what they were coming from in the Case Center? Is there going to be enough room for the additional services that we may need in the future if there's some type of services we want to offer? Also, are the specialty teachers going to have enough time in the day? The gym teachers, say, in the elementary school might have some extra responsibilities now. Are they going to be able to take in all that extra responsibility? And then will there be contractual issues with the teachers union that they have to take on additional responsibilities? And just the overall need for more transparency. This kind of hit everybody out of nowhere. And I think that the confusion now is, what are you planning to do? Why are we rushing forward with this? And it may not be a bad plan. There's a lot of I listened to the minutes, to the audio minutes online. I listened. There's a lot of good arguments in both directions. We just need to have a full comprehensive report as to what the plan is. We can't make a decision knowing, well, maybe we're going to do this, maybe we're going to do that. We need a detailed comprehensive report prior to any public discussion, and then we can have public discussion about that report. We can't have the discussion the same day that the report is issued. We need some time to, as a community, to look at it and decide what's best for our children. Thank you.
Thank you. You can pull it out. It might be easier.
I'm Jody Campagna, 23 Wayne Drive, Plainview, New York. I had some very specific questions, but the gentleman ahead of me seemed to address most of those. So I just want to say, I keep hearing over and over again, we have the space in the elementary schools. We have the space in the elementary schools. We don't. It's not like we've got these empty rooms. We're making the space. We're making the space, and at Pasadena specifically, by taking away dedicated rooms from children who need services. So we're making the space, but we're making it at the expense of what? At the expense of children who need support services? At the expense of what else? When you have to start doing all this shifting and all this moving around and consolidating and putting stuff from larger spaces into smaller spaces and taking away dedicated spaces, it's always at the expense of something. And you've got five grades worth of children who are going to be impacted by this. You've got the kindergartners, and you've got the kids in 1 through 4. So you need to think very carefully. Do we have the room, or are we making the room, and at the expense of what? Because there is a huge, huge difference. And you only get one shot to do this. Once something is impacted negatively, it's going to be a domino effect. And you're going to have five grades worth of children whose education is going to suffer for what? Why are we closing the K-Center now? Originally, I had thought it was solely to, you know, get the two middle schools on the same schedule. That issue's been addressed. So why now, at the expense of these children in the elementary schools, what is so important that we have to close the K-Center? Now that the middle schools are on the same schedule, why are we doing this? Why? Why? With so much at stake, why?
Thank you.
Jack Wolfner, 151 Sutton Drive in Plainview. I don't expect to get that kind of applause. thank you.
That is so funny.
I'm going to ask the board for a full discussion on item 8.6, disposal of obsolete equipment at Stratford Road, and 8.8, the rejection of bid number 884, and also 8.9, the award of bid number 882. I'd like to hear a full discussion about that and listen to the board's deliberations. Thank you.
Thank you.
Seeing as there's no one else coming up to speak, public participation is now closed. Thank you very much for your comments. Wait,
she's talking.
Hi, I'm Nancy Powers from 54 Beaumont Drive in Plainview. This is my first meeting, and I didn't know this was the layout, so I apologize. I thought it was a discussion. I originally came to talk about the opt-in and opting out. I realize this isn't a discussion forum, but I will just put on my question out there for maybe in future years there can be some dialogue beforehand, because trying to read about it or learn about it is difficult. I have two kids at home begging and screaming to opt out. I'm inclined to say, when you take the test, that's what you do, you take the test. I want to do what's best, everybody says, for your child. I'm curious to know what's best for the school. I feel like there's such strong advocacy from the teachers that it is not, it's actually almost offensive what my son has come home to tell me that his teachers are saying. So again, I'm putting that out there because I realize it's not a dialogue. But while I have your attention, I am going to put another agenda item on the table. And that is to consider flipping the bus schedules of elementary school with the high schools. And like I said, I wasn't prepared. I'm happy to come back and put together a presentation. But anecdotally and statistically, I don't think anybody can argue with the fact that high school students need more sleep in order to be productive. So I ask for you to consider that.
Thanks very much.
Anyone else? Don't want to cut anybody off. 2, 3, 4, 5 second rule. Okay. Public participation is now closed. Thank you for your comments. Okay. Routine business. Oh, Ms. Rothman?
Motion for routine business.
Motion for routine business. Do I have a motion? Yes, I do. Do I have a second? Ms. Bernstein? Any holds, separations, or discussion? 2, 3, 4, 5. All those in favor of routine business? Motion carried unanimously.
Before you move on?
We do have one item, 7.2, I believe. And
yes,
that relates
I'd like to speak to
administrative staff, Dr. Lewis.
So it is my pleasure to announce the appointment of the principal for the kindergarten center for next year. This is a very familiar person to us who has been serving the district admirable for many years. As we make a transition by moving the kindergarten center, current kindergarten center, Karen Heitner over to Pasadena to become the principal as Paulette Miller retires, and Greg Sesney is going to be appointed to the kindergarten center. So congratulations.
Shocks.
Yes. There were a couple of items that Mr. Yes. Wolfner brought up. What was it, 8.6, 8.8, and 8.9, I believe?
Ms. Maddie?
8.6, disposal of an obsolete fax machine. 8.8, rejection of the bid for the Matlin skylight based on our architect's recommendation because of inconsistencies in the bid. And 8.9, the track resurfacing was awarded to FASCO for $690,000.
Okay, John McNamara will be very happy on that.
Yay.
Just in case anyone is missing that, that is, we now are awarding the bid for the POB Middle School track, so we had to walk it on tonight because we want that started right away. Hopefully by the end of June, we'll have our track.
Any other discussion?
Okay.
We vote now. All those in favor of routine business?
Oh, wait, we
did. I voted, and then he made the announcement. Okay.
So we're in. New business.
The 11.1.
Is there a motion for the Earth Science Now for Middle School Review
to adopt the budget?
Ginger, yeah. Do I have a second? Debbie, discussion? All those in favor? Additional staff.
11.2, additional staff development proposals. Motion Evie, second Seth. Any discussion? All those in favor? Resolution to establish a new capital reserve fund. Do I have a motion? Ginger, do I have a second? Evie, any discussion?
Can this be explained?
Can this be right. explained?
Certainly.
Who'd like to explain it?
Just let me get my paperwork, because there's a lot of... Well, this is to establish a fund based on unexpended revenues and unanticipated revenues and unexpended expenditures based on gained by efficiencies. And you want to know the projects? Is that what specifically the projects, or that we're going to be using the money that, and it doesn't cost the taxpayer any money, it's our existing funds. We are going to be doing several projects. $5 million. Not to exceed $5 million. Boilers, paving for the elementary schools, air conditioning, science rooms at the JFK High School, science and research rooms, and interior door replacement at all elementary and secondary schools for a total of $5 million. That's for the establishment of the capital reserve for 2015 for $5 million, up to $5 million.
Comments or discussion on that?
So I just want to put everything in context because we have, as Sue has explained, we have anticipated revenues that at the end of the year we will be able to place some additional funds into a new capital reserve fund. We also have a capital reserve fund that we established last year with identified projects that we now have to vote on to spend the money. So we established a fund last year. We have to have a proposition to spend that money. We will also have another proposition to establish another fund with, again, any excess funds that are left over for this year. So again, as in last year, we'll have the budget proposition, a proposition to expend the funds from last year, and a proposition to expend a newly, to establish a new fund.
No impact.
And with no additional impact to the taxpayers.
And again, establishing the fund this year, but when we expend the money, the community has to vote again.
Absolutely, and that's why we have to have that vote. Last year, we established a fund. This year, we are asking the community to allow us to spend the money. Money's already there. We're asking the community to allow us to spend that money. That's what this is.
So moved. Resolution for, okay, that was establishing the new one. This is for the use of the existing capital
Correct.
Reserve fund. Okay, Seth? Okay. Do I have a second? Debbie? Any discussion or comments?
This would be just what Dr. Lewis
okay,
is
I'm
playing.
Just wondering if anybody wants to add anything. I didn't want to cut
right,
anybody
yes.
off. Okay, all those in favor? Raise them high. Passed unanimously. Property tax report card.
So, okay. Mrs. Snyder.
Preliminary numbers before. Now, based on our modifications from tonight, as discussed, the budget-to-budget change 0.97%. And the tax levy, 0.22%.
This is required by law. We have to transport this document to the state to report on your actions tonight.
Point 6, resolution to adopt the 2015-16 school district budget. Okay, Ginger and Amy, any further discussion? Changes, deletions, additions, everybody's happy with the budget? All those in favor? So moved. Okay. Can I have do we need to make a motion to enter into exec? Okay.
Yeah, but before you do, I just wanted to thank Ms. Maddie for her first budget session season.
Yay!
And I really want to thank all of our administrators. This really is a great budget educationally as well as financially. So thank you.
Thank you.
To enter into executive session for the purpose of discussing matters of negotiation. Debbie, Seth, all those in any discussion now? All those in favor, so moved. Okay. Thank you. Our next meeting is April 20.